Good morning. It's 6 o'clock on Friday the 19th of September. This is Morning Ireland on RTE Radio 1 with Christopher McKevitt and Gavin Jennings.
On the strength of a huge turnout, the Scots say they're staying. With most of Scotland declared, Better Together takes the night and by a greater margin than the knife edge polls suggested. Having stepped back from the brink, how has our nearest neighbour been reshaped? And what does it mean for us? We'll go straight to the news headlines with Clodagh Walsh.
Good morning. The campaign to keep Scotland in the UK is on course to win as counting continues this morning. Results so far in the referendum have favoured the no campaign. 29 of the 32 areas have so far declared their results. Overall, the no campaign stands at 55%, while the yes side stands at 45%. Counting is continuing with the final result expected within the next hour. Our Deputy Foreign Editor Fiona Mitchell reports from Edinburgh.
After a long campaign and weeks of polls indicating the results would be neck and neck, the no side was to take the first declaration. The fight back from the yes side began, not surprisingly, in Dundee, shortly before 4 a.m. this morning. But as the results started to roll in, it was clear that the no side was in the lead, and all indications said that Scottish voters had rejected independence. The focus will now turn to healing the divisions that the referendum opened up. Also on the agenda will be the increased devolved powers promised by the main Westminster party leaders in recent weeks in an effort to woo voters to the no side. The wooing has worked. The expectations will now have to be met. Fiona Mitchell, RTE News at the Edinburgh Count Centre.
Within the past half hour, Scotland's Deputy First Minister, Nicola Sturgeon, who campaigned for a yes vote, has been giving her reaction to the referendum result. She said there was a real sense of disappointment.
If that is the result of the referendum, then clearly I'm deeply disappointed. You know, like thousands of others across the country, I've put my heart and soul into this campaign, and there's a real sense of disappointment that we've fallen narrowly short of securing a yes vote, albeit that we have had some spectacular successes, not least in Glasgow, my home city, where we saw a convincing yes vote. Scotland's biggest city voting yes is something that the yes campaign is certainly celebrating. But other than that, obviously, deep personal and political disappointment. But I think there's a very clear message coming from the result tonight, both in terms of the turnout and in terms of the what looks like being the result, and that is that there is an appetite for change.
In other news, the United States Senate has approved President Obama's plan to arm and train moderate Syrian rebels to fight the group calling itself the Islamic State. It's part of Washington's campaign to fight the militants, which have taken control of a swathe of territory across Syria and Iraq. President Obama welcomed the Senate vote, which followed similar approval from the House of Representatives.
I'm pleased that Congress, a majority of Democrats and a majority of Republicans in both the House and the Senate, have now voted to support a key element of our strategy, our plan to train and equip the opposition in Syria so they can help push back these terrorists.
Two adults and six children are reported to have been killed in a shooting in Florida in the United States. The shootings took place in the town of Bell, about 60 kilometres west of Gainesville in the north of the state. Police say a grandfather killed his six grandchildren and his daughter before turning the gun on himself. The US Senate has voted to approve Kevin O'Malley as the new US ambassador to Ireland. Mr. O'Malley was approved by a voice vote on the floor of the US Senate shortly before midnight Irish time. President Obama had nominated Mr. O'Malley to the post, which had been left vacant following the departure of Dan Rooney in late 2012. Sierra Leone has imposed a 3-day curfew on all its citizens as it tries to halt the spread of Ebola. 6 million people have been confined to their homes until Sunday, while volunteers seek out people infected with the disease. The United Nations Security Council has declared Ebola a threat to international peace and security. A resolution called on all countries to provide urgent assistance to the nations affected by the disease. The trade union Unite says it will be placing pickets on a school building site in West Dublin from this morning. The move follows a ballot of Unite members working on the Ratican construction site in a row over pay levels. Talks held between the union and JJ Ratican yesterday afternoon did not find a solution. And now the weather forecast. Mist and fog will clear slowly this morning and some hazy sunshine will break through, best over Ulster and Connacht. Heavy showers will become more widespread elsewhere, with some thundery downpours expected, and these could lead to some spot flooding over parts of Munster and South Leinster, and top temperatures of 16 to 21 degrees in a moderate northeast breezes. That's it for the moment. I'll be back with headlines at 6:30, but now it's over to Pat Clark at Met Éireann for a sea area forecast.
Thank you, Clodagh. Hello, good morning everyone from Met Éireann. And here is the sea area forecast, and it's valid now for the next 24 hours. We have a small craft warning in operation. The meteorological situation at 0300 hours. A moderate, unstable east-northeast flow covers Ireland. Showery troughs near the southeast coast will become slow moving over the country during the day. The forecast now, first of all, for coasts from Carnsore Point to Roaches Point to Valentia. Wind northeast for 3 or 4, and now the forecast from Valentia to Slinehead to Malinhead. Wind northeast for 3 or 4, increasing 4 or 5 and gusty this morning. Winds will touch for 6 at times between Valentia and Slinehead later this afternoon and early tonight. And now the forecast from Malinhead to Hoathhead to Carnsore Point and for the Irish Sea. Wind east to northeast for 2 or 3, backing northeast to north today and possibly touching force 4 in places. Winds increasing north and northeast force 4 or 5 and gusty overnight. Weather for all sea areas. Misty with patches of fog locally. Some hazy sunshine at times on northern northwestern coast during the day, but some heavy and thundery showers too, especially so on southern and eastern coasts and on the Irish Sea. Visibility for all areas. Moderate or poor in precipitation, mist or fog otherwise good. The outlook now for further 24 hours that takes us up to 600 hours on Sunday. Fresh and gusty north-northeast winds, possibly strong on the Irish Sea for a time, but those winds will decrease moderate to fresh later on Saturday. Weather, further rain or showers on the east and south coasts, heavy and thundery in places with local fog patches, but mainly fair weather will extend from the northwest during Saturday morning. Finally now I have the reports at 5 a.m. Malinhead automatic east 2 knots, mist 1.7 miles, 1012 steady. The report from the Buoy and 5 is unavailable, but the visibility at Tusker Lighthouse is 2 miles. Roaches Point automatic northeast 11 knots, mist 2 miles, 1008, falling slowly. Valentia automatic east northeast 1 knot, mist 2 miles, 1008, steady. Palmullet automatic north northeast 8 knots, mist 1.6 miles, 1011, steady. And finally, Dublin Airport north northeast 3 knots, fog. 0.3 miles, 1,010, steady. Well, that's all from Met Éireann for the moment. Very good morning to you all.
Thanks, Pat. It's 7 minutes past six. You're listening to Morning Ireland. Scotland has decided it's no. Voters have rejected independence. The country has voted to stay in the United Kingdom. All of the results aren't in yet. 29 of 32 counts are finished. There are almost a quarter of a million no votes. But from the first declaration at 1:30 this morning in Clackmannanshire, the result was in little doubt.
No.
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 Yes.
Yes.
No.
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 And that gives you a flavour of what happened all through the night as we face into around just 8 minutes past six this morning. Our deputy foreign editor, Fiona Mitchell, she's been up all night. She's been watching the count unfold for us and she's on the line. Good morning, Fiona.
Good morning, Christopher.
Now, bring us the latest. What's the latest to report and how does that change the landscape, if at all?
Well, we are just hearing, just in the last few moments, we're hearing the declaration... which has declared a no.
Sorry, Fiona, we lost you there for a second. Just repeat that for us, please.
Just to say, we've just heard in the last few moments Fife, which has come in as a no, and we've heard from Edinburgh as well, which has also come in as a no in the last 20 minutes or so, and we expect at this point that Fife may very well indeed officially put the no's over. Obviously...
Okay, Fiona.
Called as a no for the last.
Fiona, we're going to leave it there, Fiona. Unfortunately, the line with you isn't good. We will return to you, but we'll just hear from Nicola Sturgeon. She is, of course, the Deputy First Minister of Scotland, a senior member of the Scottish National Party. She's been talking about her disappointment earlier.
Well, if that is the result of the referendum, then clearly I am deeply disappointed. You know, like thousands of others across the country, I've put my heart and soul into this campaign, and there's a real sense of disappointment that we've fallen narrowly short of securing a yes vote, albeit that we have had some spectacular successes, not least in Glasgow, my home city, where we saw a convincing yes vote. Scotland's biggest city voting yes is something that the Yes campaign is certainly celebrating. But other than that, obviously, deep personal and political disappointment. But I think there's a very clear message coming from the result tonight, both in terms of the turnout and in terms of the what looks like being the result. And that is that there is an appetite for change in Scotland. I think the country has been changed forever by this campaign. What we are emphatically not seeing in this result is any kind of endorsement for the status quo. More than a million people voting for independence. Many of those who didn't vote for independence, I'm sure, didn't because they believe that substantial new powers would come to the Parliament in the event of a no vote. So that appetite for change now must be delivered upon.
That's Scottish First Minister Nicola Sturgeon. We were talking to Fiona Mitchell a short time ago, and we're going to go back to her in a moment. That result from Fife has meant that the result of the Scottish referendum is now in no doubt. The no side now have 1,877,252 votes. That's 55%. And the yes side, 1,512,688 votes. The target to win was 1,822,462 votes. So after 30 of 32 counts, the result is in no doubt. Scotland has voted no.
And Fiona, there are the vital statistics there from Gavin. Fiona, you've heard you were talking there about Edinburgh before we lost you on the line.
Yes, Edinburgh had declared approximately 20 minutes ago, but it was Fife that we were waiting for because that was something which we felt would put the no side over the line, which in fact it did. But as I say, it really has been clear for the last couple of hours that it was going. You know, and I think when we heard that montage at the top of the programme, that really gave a flip of how things were going really from the start this evening. I mean, it started at about 1:30 in the morning with the first declarations, but then by about 3 a.m., once the declarations started to come in very regularly, every 5, 10, 15 minutes, it was quite clear how this vote was going to go.
Now, Glasgow, tell us a little bit about Glasgow, because the turnout there was 75%, and that seems pretty paltry by the numbers who were showing up to vote in other council areas, rather.
It's hard to believe, Christopher, that we're talking about a 75% turnout as being a weak turnout. I mean, just imagine if you get that kind of a turnout in a general election or a referendum in our. It would be thought to be a terrific turnout. But given that we've been hearing figures here like 90.1 turnout, 80.9, 89.1, I mean, this turnout has been absolutely staggering.
And it was.
I have to say, over the last days, you've really got a sense of that here. Nobody was really surprised by the turnout. Everybody expected it to be high because it has just been a campaign which has engaged everybody. Everyone here has an opinion about it. There's no such thing as saying, no, I don't want to talk about it. I have no interest in it. Everybody is engaged in it.
Over the last number of weeks, we've been hearing polls which suggest it was pretty knife-edge, that those in favour of staying in the union were ahead just literally by 1 or 2 percentage points once the undecideds were discounted. What has swung the slightly higher margin in favour of staying with the union that we've seen overnight?
Well, those undecideds were always going to be key, and everybody knew that in recent days and in recent weeks. I mean, if you think back to 6 months ago, everybody felt the foregone conclusion. It was going to be a no vote. And then in recent weeks, we had the yes pulling ahead, only by a very slight amount, but that was enough to put the momentum behind them.
Now,
and it was a game changer. And so from that point on, the no side had to, they really had to come out on the offensive, and they had to really try and get their message hammered home to the electorate. And really, I think they had been accused, the no side, quite regularly in the past of running a campaign based on fear. Did have to make it clear to people that there was going to be uncertainty, and I suppose when it comes down to it, people voted on the basis of that uncertainty. That would certainly be how it looks at the moment.
Now, we're going to hear another clip from Nicola Sturgeon of the Scottish National Party, and she is talking really about what lies ahead now that this count is all but over.
I want Scotland to have maximum power. I wanted Scotland to become an independent country. So I am indicating a willingness to work with whoever in order to deliver that. But of course, it was the No campaign, the No parties, who set out a timetable and said that they wanted to deliver more powers. I understand David Cameron is going to be making some kind of statement in the next few hours, and obviously we will see the detail of that and then we will respond to that. But I'm saying very clearly that I've listened and we have listened to the demand that has been expressed through this result tonight for substantial change in Scotland. Our country is never going to be the same again as a result of this campaign, both in terms of the nature of the campaign, a wonderfully exhilarating, empowering experience that saw record high turnout, but also in terms of people, both people who voted yes and those who would have voted no because they believe substantial more powers were coming, who absolutely want now to see those powers delivered.
Nicola Sturgeon there, and of course the vigour of the Yes campaign, the vigour with which so many people have voted to leave the United Kingdom, that suggests, as Nicola Sturgeon was saying, as indeed you were saying at the top of the bulletin, that things can't be the same, expectations have to be met.
No, absolutely. It is very much something that I think probably both sides in this campaign are now going to take. There has been a focus in recent days on trying to heal any rifts that might exist.
Fiona, we're going to cut across you. We're going to cut across you because Alex Salmond is now speaking.
Can I say thank you for that reception? But above all, thank you to Scotland for 1.6 million votes for Scottish independence. Yeah! Now, our friends in the Highlands of Scotland are still to speak, so the final results aren't in. But we know that there is going to be a majority for the No campaign. And it's important to say that our referendum was an agreed and consented process. And Scotland has, by majority, decided not, at this stage, to become an independent country. I accept that verdict of the people, and I call on all of Scotland to follow suit in accepting the democratic verdict of the people of Scotland. But I think all of us in this campaign will say that that 55%, that 1.6 million votes, is a substantial vote for Scottish independence and the future of this country. Let us say something which I hope unites all campaigns and all Scots. I think the process by which we have made our decision as a nation reflects enormous credit upon Scotland. A turnout of 86% is one of the highest in the democratic world for any election or any referendum in history. This has been a triumph for the democratic process and for participation in politics. And for example, the initiative by which our 16 and 17 year olds were able to vote has proved to be a resounding success. I suspect that no one will ever again dispute their right and ability to participate fully and responsibly in democratic elections. So we now face the consequences of Scotland's decision. Firstly, Clause 30 of the Edinburgh Agreement is now in operation. On behalf of the Scottish Government, I accept the result, and I pledge to work constructively in the interests of Scotland and the rest of the United Kingdom. Secondly, the Unionist parties made vows late in the campaign to devolve more powers to Scotland. Scotland will expect these to be honoured in rapid course. Just as a reminder, we have been promised a second reading of a Scotland Bill by the 27th of March next year. And not just the 1.6 million Scots who voted for independence will demand that that timetable is followed, but all Scots who participated in this referendum will demand that that timetable is followed. I'll be speaking to the Prime Minister shortly after this statement, and I'll have a press conference later today to reflect on that and the full results. But can I return, thirdly, to the empowerment of so many Scots entering the political process for the very first time? It's something that is so valuable, it has to be cherished, preserved, and built upon. I've said it a number of times in this campaign that the most moving thing I saw was the queue of people in Dundee 2 or 3 weeks ago, patiently waiting to register to vote, the most of them for the first time ever, deciding to participate in the democratic process. Today in Inveroonie, I met a 61-year-old lady just coming out of the polling station who had never voted before in her life. I met a soldier, a former soldier, who hadn't voted since he'd left the army some 24 years ago. And these people were inspired to enter democratic politics by the thought that they could make a difference in building something better for their country. These are people who all of us, as we campaigned, have met and been inspired by. And all of us are a part of all of that experience that we have encountered. Whatever else we can say about this referendum campaign, we have touched sections of the community who've never before been touched by politics. These sections of the community have touched us and touched the political process. I don't think that will ever be allowed to go back to business as usual in politics again. Yes. So friends, sometimes it's best to reflect where we are in a journey. 45%, 1.6 million, of our fellow citizens voting for independence. I don't think that any of us, whenever we entered politics, would have thought such a thing to be either credible or possible. I think over the last few weeks, we have seen a scare and a fear of enormous proportions, not the scaremongering directed at the Scottish people, but the scare and the fear at the heart of the Westminster establishment as they realised the mass movement of people that was going forward in Scotland. And therefore, today of all days, as we bring Scotland together, let us not dwell on the distance we have fallen short. Let us dwell on the distance we have travelled and have confidence that the movement is abroad in Scotland that will take this nation forward, and we shall go forward as one nation. Thank you very much.
And that was Alex Salmond, Scotland First Minister, leader of the Scottish National Party, sounding Fiona Mitchell, our Deputy Foreign Editor in Edinburgh, every bit as statesmanlike as he has throughout this campaign, and telling Westminster again, you have forgotten Scotland, you've forgotten large parts of Scotland. A big message there.
Absolutely, Christopher. Dwelling on two things. First of all, what he called the triumph of the democratic process, and it's very hard to argue with that. 86% turnout is absolutely phenomenal. But also dwelling on the fact that promises were made, promises that Westminster was accused of having made in a panic, and the Scottish people are not going to want those promises to be taken back now. Nicola Sturgeon echoed that earlier when she talked about the fact that this kind of a vote means that definitely people have not voted to keep the status quo, and that is now where the direction is going to be focused on in the coming days and weeks, because I think they will be very, very keen, Alex Salmond and the SNP, to make sure that this is not forgotten about. This isn't something that Westminster now puts on the long finger because it's not a threat anymore. They have to start dealing with the kind of vows and pledges that they made in recent weeks.
Fiona, we'll leave it there. We'll hopefully get back to you later on in the programme, but the 307-year-old union still intact this morning. The time is 25 minutes past six.
If you're just joining us, 31 of 32 counts declared, just the Highlands left to go yet. 1,914,187 people voted no. 1,539,920 people voted yes. The gap now too large. Scotland has voted no. With us in our studio this morning is David Farrell, Professor of Politics at UCD, and also Fiona Ness, Magazine Editor of the Scottish Business Post, and the only Scot in our studio this morning. Fiona, good morning to you.
Good morning.
How do you feel after this morning's results?
Well, I think it's been a very emotional night. It's been an emotional campaign, and I suppose I'm disappointed this morning with the result in Scotland. I started off as a no vote, surprisingly enough, and in the last couple of weeks, I've really felt the campaign has turned around for me, and I was a resounding yes by the end of it.
What changed your mind?
I think actually it was doing a piece for the Sunday Business Post last week where I rang around all of my school friends, my university colleagues. I just studied law in Glasgow about 17 years ago now, and talking to them, I started off thinking there were a lot of no's, but I was really surprised by the number of professionals who were coming out and saying yes, 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 and the reasons that they were giving me turned my own opinion around.
But this was not a view that would have been shared even within your own family.
No, actually at the start of the whole campaign, my parents rang me, and we never talk about two things in our family, politics or religion. And the first thing my dad said was, apply for a postal vote and put in a no. And I said, okay, fine, I'll do that. But obviously I wasn't allowed to have a postal vote in the end. And I'm quite glad, because I wouldn't have liked to have gone back and said to my dad, actually, no, I'm a yes now. I think my parents are probably reflective of an older generation who turned the referendum into an issue of macroeconomic risk. The younger people that I was speaking to weigh that up against the inability of Scotland's left-leaning electorate to influence Westminster. But for my parents, coming from a completely different generation, they were entrenched and just, no, don't mess with...
Because of loyalty to the union or because of fear?
I think it was out of fear, and going against a backdrop of West of Scotland Catholics, when the SNP, the people who are motivating the yes vote, would have been anti-Catholic when I was growing up, certainly when my parents were growing up, they wanted to get rid of things like Catholic schools.
Yes.
And it was very difficult for Catholics in my area to get jobs, that kind of thing.
You're from Motherwell originally, yes.
I'm from Motherwell. It's a town, actually, a conurbation of Motherwell, Wishaw and Motherwell, where Ravenscraig famously was located. And so we saw, Scotland was decimated by the Thatcher government. We're coming from that kind of backdrop, but yet it was a very strong Labour stronghold. There wasn't a lot of SNP, and people were fearful of the SNP and what they might do to the minority, the Catholic minority in that area.
Just briefly before I go to David, and we'll get news headlines in a moment, status quo, Scotland as is this morning, or do you think your country has been changed forever, irrespective of this result?
Well, I think the no vote is actually a not proven vote, that the anomaly of the Scottish legal system, where if you have a murder trial, for example, you and you don't think it's yes and you don't think it's no, you can say not proven. And I feel that the yes is just, they didn't have that, they didn't have their risks addressed properly, and they just didn't have that motivation to break away from 300 years of union, a union which was actually motivated by the Scottish elite. So I think a yes vote needed enduring and overwhelming support, and they just didn't get it. I'm not sure that there'll be a huge amount of change now. I'd be fearful that we would just slip back into being the second citizens of Britain.
David Farrell, Professor of Politics at UCD, thank you as well for coming into us this morning. That point that Fiona was addressing, I mean, Scotland has decided to stay in the United Kingdom. The United Kingdom stays as it is this morning, but is it now changed as a result of this verdict?
Yes, I think the short answer is it is changed. I mean, 1.6 million people voted for this referendum. And the parties were falling over themselves, the UK main parties were falling over themselves to make promises in desperation in the last few days to try and hold the line. Those are promises that they will now be held to. I mean, the big complication, where I agree with Fiona, obviously, in some respects, is that we have an impending British election. So attention is now about to shift to the impending election in May of next year. So there's going to be they're going to be pulled both ways. They're going to be trying to deal with the desire of the Scottish citizens who voted in favour of this referendum for something. But equally, they're about to knock a lot of lumps out of each other in the next election in Britain.
David and Fiona, stay with us. Plenty more to discuss. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Morning Ireland. It's 6:30.
Can I say thank you for that reception? But above all, thank you to Scotland for 1.6 million votes for Scottish independence. Now, our friends in the Highlands of Scotland are still to speak, so the final results aren't in. But we know that there is going to be a majority for the No campaign. And it's important to say that our referendum was an agreed and consented process. And Scotland has, by majority, decided not at this stage to become an independent country. I accept that verdict of the people, and I call on all of Scotland to follow suit in accepting the democratic verdict of the people of Scotland. But I think all of us in this campaign will say that that 55%, that 1.6 million votes, is a substantial vote for Scottish independence and the future of this country. Yeah. Let us say something which I hope unites all campaigns and all Scots. I think the process by which we have made our decision as a nation reflects enormous credit upon Scotland. A turnout of 86% is one of the highest in the democratic world for any election or any referendum in history. This has been a triumph for the democratic process and for participation in politics. And for example, the initiative by which our 16 and 17-year-olds were able to vote has proved to be a resounding success. I suspect that no one will ever again dispute their right and ability to participate fully and responsibly in democratic elections. So we now face the consequences of Scotland's decision. Firstly, Clause 30 of the Edinburgh Agreement is now in operation. On behalf of the Scottish Government, I accept the result and I pledge to work constructively in the interests of Scotland and the rest of the United Kingdom. Secondly, the Unionist parties made vows late in the campaign to devolve more powers to Scotland. Scotland will expect these to be honoured in rapid course. Just as a reminder, we have been promised a second reading of a Scotland Bill by the 27th of March next year. And not just the 1.6 million Scots who voted for independence will demand that that timetable is followed, but all Scots who participated in this referendum will demand that that timetable is followed. I'll be speaking to the Prime Minister shortly after this statement, and I'll have a press conference later today to reflect on that and the full results. But can I return, thirdly, to the empowerment of so many Scots entering the political process for the very first time? It's something that is so valuable, it has to be cherished, preserved, and built upon. I've said it a number of times in this campaign that the most moving thing I saw was the queue of people in Dundee 2 or 3 weeks ago, patiently waiting to register to vote. The most of them for the first time ever, deciding to participate in the democratic process. Today in Inverurie, I met a 61-year-old lady just coming out of the polling station who had never voted before in her life. I met a soldier, a former soldier, who hadn't voted since he'd left the army some 24 years ago. And these people were inspired to enter democratic politics by the thought that they could make a difference in building something better for their country. These are people who all of us, as we campaigned, have met and been inspired by. And all of us are a part of all of that experience that we have encountered. Whatever else we can say about this referendum campaign, we have touched sections of the community who've never before been touched by politics. These sections of the community have touched us and touched the political process. I don't think that will ever be allowed to go back to business as usual in politics again. So friends, sometimes it's best to reflect where we are on a journey. 45%, 1.6 million, of our fellow citizens voting for independence. I don't think that any of us, whenever we entered politics, would have thought such a thing to be either credible or possible. I think over the last few weeks, we have seen a scare and a fear of enormous proportions, not the scaremongering directed at the Scottish people, but the scare and the fear at the heart of the Westminster establishment as they realised the mass movement of people that was going forward in Scotland. And therefore, today of all days, as we bring Scotland together, let us not dwell on the distance we have fallen short. Let us dwell on the distance we have travelled and have confidence that the movement is abroad in Scotland that will take this nation forward, and we shall go forward as one nation. Thank you very much.
Good morning, everyone. The people of Scotland have spoken. We have chosen unity over division and positive change rather than needless separation. Today is a momentous result for Scotland and also for the United Kingdom as a whole. By confirming our place within the Union, we have reaffirmed all that we have in common and the bonds that tie us together. Let them never be broken. But as we celebrate, let us also listen. More than 85% of the Scottish population has voted. People who were disengaged from politics have turned out in large numbers. And while they have voted for the Constitution, that was not the only or perhaps the major issue that drove them to the polls. Every political party must now listen to their cry for change, which could be echoed in every part of our United Kingdom, but had the opportunity to express itself first in Scotland. To those who have supported us and all that great team of volunteers, that's you. All of you, all the political parties who've worked for this outcome, I want to say thanks from the bottom of my heart. Thank you very much. You represent the majority of opinion, and your voices have been heard. We've taken on the argument and we've won. The silent have spoken. Of course, I understand that amongst those who supported Yes, there will be disappointment or even grief. Defeat is painful, and I can tell you that from my own personal experience. I know there are many people with deep and genuine commitments to Scotland on the Yes side. They will and must continue to make their contribution to the political debate in our country. But that debate must move on from the Constitution to the day and daily issues that affect their lives and prospects. And the Scottish Parliament must use both the powers that it holds now and those which are coming to it to address these concerns. When the Scottish Parliament was born, delivered by Donald Dewar and the government of which I was a member, we talked about devolution being a journey. He would have been proud that the Scottish democracy is so vibrant, so alive, and so determined to take the next step down the road that we began. So I'm clear that all of the parties who've made shared commitments to change must now start to translate those commitments into action, and I give you my commitment to support that process. We will work with all of the people of Scotland in advancing these commitments. And we must also recognise that the debate has created some fairly deep divisions in our country. And this has been a campaign that has both energised but at times divided. And some people have felt unable to speak except through the ballot box. Those divisions now need to be addressed, and that requires leadership. And my colleagues and I will play our part and bringing our country together to demonstrate that after this vote, we can remain united. This has not been an easy campaign.
Campaigning against Yes for Change is sometimes difficult to them to argue for No. We were obliged to point out that some of the arguments for separation were going to cause damage to our country, but we had to do that because those risks were real, and it's my view it contributes to a good sense of the Scottish people that they decided that these risks were too great to take. But the vote is over, and the Scottish people have now given their verdict. We have made a decision for progress and change for Scotland and within the United Kingdom. Come on, Scotland, let's get on with it together.
Good morning. The people of Scotland have spoken, and it is a clear result. They have kept our country of four nations together. And like millions of other people, I am delighted. As I said during the campaign, it would have broken my heart to see our United Kingdom come to an end. And I know that that sentiment was shared by people not just across our country, but also around the world, because of what we've achieved together in the past and what we can do together in the future. So now it is time for our United Kingdom to come together and to move forward. A vital part of that will be a balanced settlement, fair to people in Scotland and, importantly, to everyone in England, Wales and Northern Ireland as well. Let us remember first why we had this debate and why it was right to do so. The Scottish National Party was elected in Scotland in 2011 and promised a referendum on independence. We could have tried to block that. We could have tried to put it off. But just as with other big issues, it is right to take and not to duck the big decision. I am a passionate believer in our United Kingdom. And I wanted more than anything for our United Kingdom to stay together. But I'm also a Democrat, and it was right that we respected the SNP's majority in Holyrood and gave the Scottish people their right to have their say. Let us also remember why it was right to ask the definitive question, yes or no. Because now the debate has been settled for a generation, or as Alex Salmond has said, perhaps for a lifetime. So there can be no disputes, no reruns. We have heard the settled will of the Scottish people. Scotland voted for a stronger Scottish Parliament backed by the strength and security of the United Kingdom. And I want to congratulate the No campaign for that, for showing people that our nations really are better together. I also want to pay tribute to Yes Scotland for a well-fought campaign. And to say to all those who did vote for independence, we hear you. We now have a chance, a great opportunity, to change the way the British people are governed and change it for the better. Political leaders on all sides of the debate now bear a heavy responsibility to come together and work constructively, to advance the interests of people in Scotland, as well as those in England, Wales and Northern Ireland, for each and every citizen of our United Kingdom. To those in Scotland sceptical of the constitutional promises that were made, let me say this. We have delivered on devolution under this government, and we will do so again in the next Parliament. The three pro-union parties have made commitments, clear commitments, on further powers for the Scottish Parliament. We will ensure that those commitments are honoured in full. And I can announce today that Lord Smith of Kelvin, who so successfully led Glasgow's Commonwealth Games, has agreed to oversee the process to take forward these devolution commitments with powers over tax, spending and welfare, all agreed by November, and draft legislation published by January. Just as the people of Scotland will have more power over their affairs, so it follows that the people of England, Wales and Northern Ireland must have a bigger say over theirs. The rights of these voters need to be respected, preserved and enhanced. It is absolutely right that a new and fair settlement for Scotland should be accompanied by a new and fair settlement that applies to all parts of our United Kingdom. In Wales, there are proposals to give the Welsh Government and Assembly more powers. And I want Wales to be at the heart of the debate on how to make our United Kingdom work for all our nations. In Northern Ireland, we must work to ensure that the devolved institutions function effectively. But I have long believed that a crucial part missing from this national discussion is England. We have heard the voice of Scotland, and now the millions of voices of England must also be heard. The question of English votes for English laws, the so-called West Lothian question, requires a decisive answer. So just as Scotland will vote separately in the Scottish Parliament on their issues of tax, spending and welfare, so too England, as well as Wales and Northern Ireland, should be able to vote on these issues. And all this must take place in tandem with and at the same pace as the settlement for Scotland. I hope that this is going to take place on a cross-party basis. I've asked William Hague to draw up these plans. We will set up a cabinet committee right away, and proposals will also be ready to the same timetable. I hope the Labour Party and other parties will contribute. It is also important that we have wider civic engagement about how to improve governance throughout our United Kingdom, including how to empower our great cities. And we will say more about this in the coming days. This referendum has been hard fought. It has stirred strong passions. It has electrified politics in Scotland and caught the imagination of people across the whole of our United Kingdom. It will be remembered as a powerful demonstration of the strength and vitality of our ancient democracy. Record numbers registered to vote and record numbers cast their vote. We should all be proud of that. It has reminded us how fortunate we are that we're able to settle these vital issues at the ballot box peacefully and calmly. Now we must look forward and turn this into the moment when everyone, whichever way they voted, comes together to build that better, brighter future for our entire United Kingdom. Thank you very much and good morning.
Welcome back to Morning Ireland. 25 minutes to 7 o'clock. Brian Finn is here with some analysis of the currency situation, Brian, because people have been making money off the back of this referendum.
Well, depending on when they got in, Christopher, because we saw, if you remember that Sunday Times poll a few weeks ago, which indicated that Scottish voters might vote in favour of independence, and we saw Stirling come back quite a bit then.
The galvanising poll, as it were.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, it concentrated a lot of minds at the time. But in the last few days, we saw an interesting outcome where Stirling began to come back, and even about 2 days ago we saw it come back to yesterday it came to a two-year high, sterling against the euro, and so it looked like that traders were pricing in this no vote from quite a distance out, and they were beginning to focus on some good economic indicators in the UK. We got unemployment figures the other day, the employment numbers looked quite good, the Bank of England again, they're looking at raising interest rates in the next few months, so they were beginning to look at this the strength of the United Kingdom and pricing in this no vote. But let's see how things progress during the night, because Brenda Kelly, who's chief market strategist with IG Markets in London, is standing by. Brenda, as I was saying there, this no vote seems to have been priced in by traders over the past few days. So is it expected to be business as usual today?
Well, we are expecting to see an increased amount of volume, to be perfectly honest with you. Certainly, the polls were right in the end that Scotland would vote no. And while the economic risk may have receded as a result of this, we may also actually see a little bit of a pop higher in gilt yields. But we have seen the pound breach at one stage 165 against the dollar and recover substantially since the first poll came out from YouGov, and also hit a two-year high against the euro. But we are seeing a little bit of profit taking slip in now, but the FTSE equity is still slated to open around 80 points higher as a little bit of risk appetite returns, and then we could see the banking stocks pop that bit higher as well when the markets open.
I know you've been manning the decks there since the early hours. Was there any point at which nerves began to fray, or was it plain sailing all the way through and it looked like a good bit of volume coming in?
Well, there was a good, decent volume all morning long, but there was a moment there where we did see a little bit of weakness in the sterling, where there was a big win for Yes and Dundee, but that was very short-lived, and it certainly wasn't enough to change the actual outcome. In fact, I think around 10:30 last night, the final poll that we got from YouGov pretty much cemented this market that a no was going to carry, and it turns out that they were actually right in the end.
I saw The View express this morning that the fiscal genie is out of the bottle, if you like, and that now that Scotland will be looking for concessions, Wales and Northern Ireland will similarly look for concessions. Is that likely to put sterling under pressure in the long term?
Well, there's obviously a lot of drivers in the sterling and the dollar end of things, to be honest with you. Certainly we have seen a lot of dollar strength, but the devolution we can probably come to expect as a result of promises that were made in the run-up to this referendum could very well create a certain amount of volatility in the market. But I think mostly it'll be relief that there has been no separation of the union. So we're not expecting it to be as dramatic as it could have been.
And a turn back and a concentration now on the strong performance that the UK economy has been putting in for the last while?
Certainly, I think the fundamentals do tend to show that that the UK is very much on the front foot. There are a few, obviously, issues in regards to inflation and wage growth as a whole, but ultimately the political ramifications of this have been put to bed for the time being. So it'll be just the questions will be asked now, why the Westminster politicians left it so late to take a real part in the debate. But for the markets, I think the worry of Scottish independence is very much off the agenda.
Brenda Kelly at IG Markets in London, thank you very much for talking to us this morning. Let's take a look at where that euro stands now against the currency. It's at around 78.4 pence sterling.
Thank you indeed, Brian. Let's turn to Steve Aiken, CEO of the British Irish Chamber of Commerce. Thank you very much for coming into studio. Presumably you are saying, thank goodness common sense has prevailed.
What we're saying is thank goodness that there's some certainty coming back into the process. One of the things that businesses are looking for is certainty, and this created a degree of uncertainty, and actually having this vote means that we're able to look forward and see where we're going to.
How did that uncertainty manifest itself? What were the issues?
I think people were quite nervous about what was going to happen, particularly sort of in the energy sector, some of the sectors of the agribusiness sector. The banking and financial services sector were obviously quite concerned. And those sort of things were making people think about where are we going to in the future and where is that likely to go to. But I think the key point is, and this is one of the things that we're being very clear on, is that things have now changed fundamentally. The UK, as it is moving in a new direction. And we're already seeing the likes of Northern Ireland is likely to get its corporation tax at 12.5%. We see Owen Cavan-Jones, the First Minister of Wales, talking very clearly about we need to have some form of constitutional convention and looking sort of the economic sectors where we're going to as well. And in Scotland, what's it going to look like? We're already talking about sort of tax-raising powers. We're also looking at sort of changes in how Scotland's going to be administered. And the one thing that's come very clear from the referendum is that Westminster is going to have to deliver to Scotland. And I think, as was said earlier, the key point that we have at the moment, it's a not proven.
The buzz phrase is Devo Max. It sounds almost like a flu remedy or something like that. But what does it essentially mean for people in Scotland and also for people here in Ireland?
Well, it's very interesting, of course, with the British Irish Chamber of Commerce, right from the beginning, from our first conference, we had Nicola Sturgeon come and talk to the conference. We've had Fiona Hislop come and talk to us. We've actually had Fergus Ewing coming to talk to us. And one of the things they always talked about is that this isn't a zero-sum game. This is about making Scotland more competitive. It's about being more business-focused and being able business to grow as well. And I think one of the interesting things is that Scotland will become more competitive. Northern Ireland will become more competitive. And for us in Ireland, what we need to do is raise our game.
And are we talking 12.5% competitive?
I don't think 12.5%, because if you look at the Scottish white paper that the Scottish government released, they were talking about a 2-3% below sort of UK, whatever UK base rate would actually be in corporation tax. So we're probably looking at about somewhere about 17%. But remember, they've got the access to the patent box. Scotland has a very large life sciences sector. It has a very large engineering sector as well.
And we have very long memories. People might remember about 11 years ago, 1993, a huge tussle between the IDA here and the equivalent body in Scotland to secure around 1,000 jobs with digital mainframe manufacturing and that sort of thing down in Galway. Air won. It got the gig. It got the jobs. It was a black day for Ireland. Are we going to see more of that?
It's not a zero-sum game. It's not between them and us. I think we're all going to have to be as competitive as we can, and we need to be able to look very closely at where we can get competitive advantage. We really need to sort things out here in Ireland, particularly to do with education, getting our workforce more educated. We need to do something about our infrastructure, and we need to be much more, we need to get our game face on. And this is a wake-up call for us as well, to be able to sort of compete across the British Isles and in the wider market as well.
Number one thing the government should do here?
Number one thing the government should do here is do something about the education process.
Make it more business friendly.
Make it very business friendly.
Okay, we'll leave it there. Steve Aitken of the British Irish Chamber of Commerce, thank you very much for coming into studio for us this morning. The time is just coming up to 17 minutes to 7 o'clock.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Morning Ireland, starting at an earlier time today as results have come in from Scotland overnight. 31 out of 32 centres declaring. Scotland has voted no by almost 2 million votes to 1.5 million votes. And a short time ago, Peter Hain, the former Welsh and Northern Ireland Secretary with the British Labour Party, told the BBC the government had to acknowledge the strength of the Scottish vote and its implications for the future of the Union as a whole.
For me, the vote in Scotland was a revolt against the Westminster elite, both yes voters and no voters. And what now needs to happen as a matter of urgency is that the Prime Minister and all the party leaders have got to seize this opportunity. The natural inclination of the Westminster establishment is to be minimalist and incremental. The decision has got to be maximalist and radical, because there's such a strong feeling throughout the country, not just in Scotland but in Wales and in England as well, against the way that politics has been done. And I think Scotland has spoken for the whole of the United Kingdom in saying we want change, and we want change that's got to sweep right through the United Kingdom, and that must include England. Yes, more powers for Scotland have been promised. Wales will need more powers and deserve more powers as well, and probably Northern Ireland too. But the big unanswered question for British politics has been the English question, and the need for people in England, whether they're in Cornwall or the northeast of England or Manchester City region, to say, we want more say too. We don't want to be ruled by the London elite any more than Scotland.
And that was Peter Hain speaking a short time ago. David Farrell, Professor of Politics at UCD, and Fiona Ness from the Sunday Business Post, and more importantly, from Scotland, are still with us in studio. Fiona, do you get any impression, judging from, we'll say, the fact that the polls were so close in recent days, but we now see a result of around 55-45. Did people who might have been willing to vote yes and were telling pollsters they were going to vote yes, did they draw back in the last few days?
I definitely think there was a fear factor. At the very end, that sense of losing the Britishness, that the collectiveness going out into the world, was probably something that people drew back on. I know certainly from talking to people in my own family, my sister said she cast her vote, which was a no, but then went into the car and had to cry about it, because, you know, I think she wanted to be a yes. But for a healthy sense of national confidence, Scotland does need to run its own affairs. But we have a kind of frozen child syndrome where we don't have that national confidence, so we're unable to make just that leap ahead. I'd hope that the yes vote has given people that sense of confidence, but people's confidence and their courage has been compromised by many centuries of having someone else to blame for our problems, and we need to push forward past that.
David Farrell, this vote, it's very hard to judge it in the context of other elections or other referenda. It's quite unique, a country deciding on its own future and not at the point of a gun, and yet the result, to paraphrase the comedian Frankie Boyle, almost seems to be an admission of Stockholm Syndrome on the part of Scotland.
You still have 1.5 million Scottish voters who voted in favour of the proposition, and you had the highest turnout in any referendum on these islands ever. So there's clearly an awful lot of passion. You only have to look at some of the speeches in the last few days to see the level of passion that was raised about this issue. So a genie has been put out of the bottle now, and that's not going to be put back in too easily. The main parties from the United Kingdom have now promised that something is going to be done. And whatever about what Steve Aiken was saying, and I agree with much of what he was saying earlier on, there's still no doubt that something more has to happen. There is no steady state now. There is no status quo.
Steve Aiken, still with us from the British-Irish Chamber of Commerce. Steve, you spent a lot of time in Scotland yourself. You were living there for about 20 years.
Yeah, it's in my previous life, I was a submarine captain, so I was based in Fast Lane at Helensburgh, and I lived there for about 20 years.
You have two daughters
and
still
I've,
over there.
I've got four daughters, and I'll be working until I'm 90 to pay for them. But my two eldest daughters live in Scotland. One lives in Dundee, and the other lives in Glasgow. And I'll not say which way they voted, but one voted yes and one voted no.
Yeah, Dundee delivering one of the largest yes votes in the country. Why were they divided?
It was very interesting talking to them, because they both made very rational decisions about what they were about. One of my daughters works very much in the life sciences sector. And one of the things with main concern was access to continued funding. And this is why I think the education thing is critical. The life sciences sector in Scotland is huge and it's growing. And it's got a great link to academia and the universities. And that is seen as being very much part of the United Kingdom's drive to sort of greater sort of research and development. So that was the rational decision they made there. And the other decision was the question about growing inequality. And there's the sense of growing inequality across Scotland, which is out with the control of the Scottish Government to sort out. And that's why they both made their sort of rational decisions. They both decided to live in Scotland. They will be living in Scotland for the rest of their lives. And that's why they came to those decisions.
Fiona, it's over a generation ago now. The late 1970s in Scotland was last asked this question. And the margin at that stage was far more definitive than it is now. What's changed between now and the late 1970s that has made more people in Scotland accept the idea that they should be independent, if albeit that it's not enough?
I think just living through the Thatcher government, I know people are saying, well, Thatcher was such a long time ago, do you have to keep harking back to that? But she decimated Scotland. And I think living through that, people have come through that, and now they're saying, we want our own country, we can't make it any worse than has been made by Westminster. And then in 1997, when we had the opportunity for devolution, there was a 74% agreement for devolution. So I think you can see the progress from the 70s through to now.
David Farrell, that decimation by the Thatcher years and the feeling of a disconnect between Westminster and the regions, it's not just a factor in Scotland, it's a factor particularly in large swathes of Northern England or perhaps in Wales too.
That's right, and so one of the issues that the parties in the UK Parliament have to consider is how they react to this change that's going to happen. So is the reaction in the form of giving more powers to an English-based Parliament, or is it in the form, as Labour would prefer, to regional authorities, particularly in the north where they are demanding this? The thing to note, of course, is this is not a unique phenomenon in the United Kingdom. I mean, we're seeing this across Europe. Just look at Catalonia and Spain. Yes. Look at what's going on in Belgium. So this clearly moves afoot right across Europe for some form of greater devolution in certain regions.
David Farrell and Fiona Ness, stay with us. Steve Aiken, thank you very much for coming in to us this morning. Plenty more on Scotland between now and 9 o'clock. If you've just joined us, Scotland has voted no. It has rejected independence. It will remain in the United Kingdom by a margin of 55% to 45%, almost all the results in. It's 10 to 7.
There has been a dreadful tragedy in the state of Florida. We're going over to our Washington correspondent, Katrina Perry. Good morning to you, Katrina, or good evening there. What can you tell us?
Well, as you say, Christopher, an extreme tragedy happened in Florida yesterday evening afternoon. At around 4 p.m, 28-year-old Sarah Lorraine Spirit and her six children went to her father's house, as they regularly did. They used to spend a lot of time at his house in the town of Bell, very small town about 80 miles southwest of Jacksonville, population of just 450 people. So they went there to visit her father, the children's grandfathers, and whatever happened, 51-year-old Don Spirit shot his daughter and killed and shot his six grandchildren, three boys, 4-year-old Brandon, 8-year-old Jonathan, 11-year-old Caleb, and three girls, 9-year-old Kylie, 5-year-old Destiny, and Alana, just 2.5 months old. He then dialed 911, and the operator who answered the call was alarmed by the comments that he was making, because he was talking about harm he was going to do to people, harm he had done to people, how he's going to harm himself. So the 911 operator dispatched police to the scene immediately, and upon their arrival they found Don Spirit, and he, when he saw the police coming, then shot and killed himself. police entered the property and found the bodies of his daughter and his six grandchildren. Now, police were asked in a press conference they gave a short time ago, did they know why this had happened or was there any indication of motive? And this is what the Gilchrist County Police Sheriff Robert Schultz had to say.
We have no indication of what caused this man to do what he did. And we may never know. There's certainly no signs or indications to us previously that something like this could or was going to happen. And to say that this county, this community, was not going to be devastated from this, from a small county, we're all family here. And what can you say? There's certain things in life that you can explain. There's certain things that you can. This is not one that I can explain.
And that's the Sheriff of Gilchrist County in Florida, Sheriff Robert Schultz. Katrina, almost immediately, this horrific crime, this horrific killing of so many children, it echoes, I suppose, the great fear in America about gun control. One thinks back to Sandy Hook and the awful events there of some year and a half ago, year and 11 months ago, or 10 months ago. There is obviously a mental health issue here, and there is obviously a gun control issue here.
Well, we have no details really about John Spirit at this stage, other than police did confirm that he had a criminal record. They didn't go into specifics on that, but we do know that 11 years ago he pleaded guilty to a charge of being a convicted felon in the possession of firearms when he was on a hunting trip and he accidentally shot dead his then 8-year-old son. Police at the time were, I think, happy enough that it was an accident, but as a result, John Spirit did spend some time in jail. Police, as you heard in the clip there, have no indication as to motive. They did say that they had been called out to the property several times in recent years for a whole variety of reasons, but they didn't go into details as to what they were at this stage.
A response from fire control activists or firearms control activists, a response from those who would have an interest in mental health issues, or is it too early at this point?
Well, it's almost 2 a.m. in the morning here, so as you'll appreciate, most people who usually give reactions to these type of things aren't probably at their office desks at this time. Okay. So there hasn't been dramatic reaction to that. I think at this point in time, people really are just shocked. I mean, the town where the tragedy happened, it's a very small community, just 450 people. The police sheriff said that, you know, obviously enough, the police department there has never dealt with anything like this before. And in such a small community of only 450 people, losing six children and a young woman, just 28, that's a massive loss for any community to bear, let alone one so small. And the police, the sheriff there was actually quite anxious to point out that they're concerned about the rest of the children in the community who'll wake up to this news tomorrow morning, their friends, their pals, their schoolmates, and you know how they're going to deal with that level of tragedy in a small community.
Katrina Perry, Washington correspondent, with that sad news from Florida. We will leave it there. The time is just coming up to 4 minutes to 7 o'clock.
You have now reached your destination, Dublin Airport short-term car park. Now proceed to Butler's Chocolate Cafe in Terminal 1 or 2 for your free coffee. Recalculating. Yes, that's a free coffee.
There's never been a better time to park at Dublin Airport, because right now you'll receive a free Butler's coffee with every short-term booking before October 12th. Just one of the perks of parking with us. Book now at dublinairport.com and get closer, quicker. See dublinairport.com for details.
Winter is on its way. So before you start using your home heating on a daily basis, now is an ideal time to have your gas boiler serviced. As part of Carbon Monoxide Awareness Week, SSE Airtricity are offering your gas boiler a service and safety check by an RGII-approved engineer for just €79. Besides making your home safe for your family, a service could improve the efficiency of your boiler and save you up to €150 this winter. Call 1850 81 8130 now, or to book online, visit sseairtricity.com. Subject to availability, terms and conditions apply.
3 minutes to seven, you're listening to Morning Ireland. Scotland has voted no to independence, almost all the results in, 55% no, 45% yes. We're going to hear from Brussels in just a moment, but let's hear from Alistair Darling, one of the leading campaigners on the no side.
The debate has created some fairly deep divisions in our country, and this has been a campaign that has both energised but at times divided, and some people have felt unable to speak except through the ballot box. Those divisions now need to be addressed, and that requires leadership. And my colleagues and I will play our part in bringing our country together to demonstrate that after this vote, we can remain united.
That's Alistair Darling. Our Europe editor, Tony Connolly, is in Brussels. Tony, will European leaders be breathing a sigh of relief this morning?
I think they will, Gavin, because I think there were so many complexities and dilemmas that would have been posed by a yes vote in Scotland, both politically and legally. On the one hand, because Scotland has been a de facto member of the European Union for 40 years, it would have been difficult simply to exclude Scotland from European membership, whereas, of course, the legal aspect of it means that Scotland would either have to reapply, start the whole process of accession, which could take years, or there would have had to been some fairly tricky political manoeuvrings to have a fast-track process for Scotland. The other dilemma, of course, is what message a yes vote would have sent to the rest of Europe, where there have been a lot of, there's been a lot of agitation, particularly in Catalonia, for regional separatism, but also elsewhere in northern Italy, in Germany, in France, and so on. So I think there will be a sigh of relief, but no official reaction yet from Brussels.
In all those regions which have separatist ambitions, does this result change their desire or lessen their desire for an independence vote of their own? They've seen what's happened in Scotland. They may well want to have a go themselves.
That's right. I think you're going to see a recalibration of how they respond to this. Now, the big focus has been on Catalonia because they want a referendum in November. And indeed, the Catalan Parliament is going to vote on that today. I think what they will do now is say, well, look, at least Scotland had the chance. At least the UK was prepared to give Scottish people the vote, whereas the Spanish government has vowed to block any attempt at a referendum in Catalonia for independence. There were other regional elements and entities within across the European Union where perhaps regional separatism had been in abeyance, but suddenly the Scottish vote had reawakened interest and given people perhaps a hope that things might change. Those regions, they will probably now recede in their aspirations now that Scotland has voted no.
Tony Connolly in Brussels, thank you. If you're wondering what those pips were in the background, it's 7 o'clock. You're listening to Morning Ireland on RTE News Now and RTE Radio 1.